Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another Internet Work Expert Radio Tech Talk. This is part two of our discussion of the CCIE Route Switch Core Knowledge section, and we're going to have some fun today discussing everybody's favorite open standard interior gateway protocol. It's open shortest path first. Before we get started in our technical discussion, a couple of announcements, and these announcements were made on our blog. That's blog.internetworkexpert.com. Make sure you head up there and subscribe via the RSS feed, because you'll want to know right as new articles are posted each day on our blog site for sure. But anyways, a couple of updates to let you know about. Number one, Peter Lapukov posted the fact that some of our security materials have been updated. So there are new blueprint security materials that have hit. And also, we were very happy to announce this week that we have a core knowledge simulation product available for the security track. As you probably know, the core knowledge section, everybody's favorite section of the CCIE lab exam, the core knowledge section is hitting the security track on June 15th. We wanted to make sure folks could kind of get a temperature gauge of how they're doing towards those core knowledge questions. So we really, really worked hard this week to release a 100 question version of the simulation product, and we'll be working very, very hard over the next couple of weeks to build that question database. But we did get a 100 question version out, and that'll update behind the scenes just like our core knowledge simulator does for the route switch track. You just wait a couple of days, go in, and you're going to see that the database has gotten even bigger. So it just grows and grows and grows, and that's obviously a tremendous value for a very low price tag of $99. Remember what those simulators are all about, by the way. We're not claiming to have the actual core knowledge questions that you will see. Of course not. That's not the point. The point of the core knowledge simulators are to do two things. Number one, to really indicate where you're weak. I mean, a question will come up and you'll be like, I don't even have any idea what this is talking about. Well, obviously, that just pinpointed a really weak part of your core knowledge. And then what you can do is, the second part of the beauty of the product is, you go and you get the more information link out of the answer key version, and that's going to right away get you reading and studying some excellent information via the internet to get you ready for that core knowledge section. So check out the blog. We've got some great updates involving some product releases that occurred this week. Well, let's not delay any longer the topic that you're here to hear about, and that is OSPF, the Open Shortest Path First Link State Routing Protocol. You know, OSPF was designed from the ground up to be much more scalable and much more efficient than Routing Information Protocol, RIP. Students often ask me, you know, what's your favorite CCIE routing protocol? Or I'll ask them that question, and I'll typically let them know it's OSPF, and my least favorite being RIP. Why is my least favorite lab routing protocol RIP? Well, it's the really slow convergence. The convergence is so bad with RIP that sometimes we'll make a change that breaks our IGPs, and we won't even discover it initially because RIP is so ridiculously slow to converge. It can take up to 3-4 minutes before you can actually see that you've broken RIP. By the way, one quick tip on that in the CCIE lab exam is to go ahead and flush your forwarding information base. Make sure you clear your routing tables after making a change that may impact RIP. That way you'll see anything that you've broken right away. Well, let's talk a bit more about OSPF fundamentals here. Some OSPF features that I really want you to be aware of include the fact that OSPF runs on top of IP and uses protocol number 89. OSPF is obviously classless and therefore has no issues supporting variable length subnet masking. Let's be aware of the multicast reserved addresses, link scope reserved addresses that OSPF is going to utilize. And those, of course, are 224.0.0.5. That's our shortest path first router's address. So when OSPF wants to communicate information to all OSPF speakers, it will multicast the information to 224.0.0.5. Obviously, great information for our flashcards that we probably want to build out of index cards. Then we have 224.0.0.6, and this is the multicast address that OSPF uses when it wants to send updates to the designated router or backup designated router on the segment for its hellos and its updates. OSPF is capable of doing plain text and MD5 authentication. EIGRP, we know, just limits you to MD5, which makes good sense because Cisco themselves even admit that while OSPF can do plain or clear text authentication, it's certainly not recommended for security purposes. In fact, Cisco tells us that it's really there to guard against your own misconfiguration. Clear text authentication really is not a security mechanism. We know that open shortest path first is going to use Dijkstra's algorithm in order to produce a shortest path tree for each destination, and link state advertisements are going to be used to build a database of your topology. Another area that we definitely want to be well versed in the core knowledge section concerning OSPF are the various packet types that we can run into with the protocol. Type 1 OSPF packets are known as hellos, and you might literally have to identify one of these packets based on output from the Cisco router. Type 1 are hello packets. These are the fundamental packets that are used to build our OSPF adjacencies. Type 2 packets are our database description packets, DBD packets. These database description packets, or type 2s, are used to check for database synchronization between our Cisco routers. Type 3 packets are LSRs, or link state request packets. These packets are used to request link state specifics from one router to another. We have our type 4 LSU packets. I think that's Louisiana State University. No, it's not Louisiana State. It's Link State Update. The Link State Update, or Type 4, is used to send requested Link State information. And then finally, we have our Type 5 OSPF packets. These are the Link State Acknowledgement, or LSA packets, and they acknowledge the receipt of the other packet types. OSPF devices become what we call neighbors, or we call this the establishment of an adjacency. An OSPF adjacency occurs through the exchange of those hello packets, those type 1 OSPF packet types. After the adjacency is established, the link state databases, or LSDBs, of the devices are synchronized. We have two OSPF neighbors on a point-to-point link, and in this case, they would establish a full adjacency with each other. In a local area network or LAN environment, all routers are going to form a full adjacency, but just with the DR or the BDR, that designated router or the backup designated router. Notice that this allows us to only send updates to the DR, and the DR will be responsible for updating all of the other OSPF speakers. Now, you have your DR and your BDR in the LAN segment, and all the other OSPF speakers in that local area network are termed DR Others. And these DR Others are going to maintain just a partial neighbor relationship with each other. Now, after your OSPF adjacencies have been established, LSAs are exchanged through a totally reliable mechanism, or at least we hope it's totally reliable. The LSAs, the link state acknowledgments, are going to be flooded throughout the topology to ensure a topological awareness. Now, link state acknowledgments are going to have a sequence number and a lifetime value. And these LSAs convey the cost of links used for the shortest path first calculation. We have a cost metric in OSPF, and of course the cost metric is going to be based on interface bandwidth. We also have a link state acknowledgement aging timer, and that is a 30-minute timer by default. When I say LSA there, it's not link state acknowledgement, it's a link state advertisement. So we have a link state advertisement aging timer, and by default, that's going to be 30 minutes in duration. That's really an interesting feature of OSPF. Sometimes it's called the paranoid update. And what will happen is, just to make sure everybody in the OSPF topology is synchronized, what will happen is at the end of that 30-minute aging time, all of the devices will flood their LSAs out again. You can see why it's called the paranoid update. Everything was probably fine. It's just kind of out of paranoia to make sure that all of the link state databases are synchronized. It does this aging and flooding behavior. Now, hello packets are going to be sent out periodically, and those hello packets are going to contain some fields that we need to be aware of. The hello packets are going to contain an OSPF router ID field. This identifies the router, and it's chosen from the highest IP address that's active on the device. You should note that loopback interfaces are going to override physical interfaces. But if you wanted to go ahead and just manually assign a particular router ID, maybe it's not even an IP address that's active on the device, you can do this with the OSPF router configuration command of router-ID. Notice that this router ID value can be used for various purposes in OSPF, including acting as a tiebreaker for the DR election. Another field that's in the hello packet of OSPF is the hello and dead intervals. This, of course, dictates the frequency at which hellos are sent and the amount of time that can elapse before a router is declared dead. By default, the hello interval is 10 seconds, and the default dead interval is going to be 4 times that value on our Ethernet-based networks. Obviously, these defaults are going to vary somewhat based on network type. Another particular field in the hello packet is the neighbors field, and this field is going to list all of the adjacent routers to that particular device. There's an area ID field, and this is where we're going to carry our area identifier. This is always going to be 0, of course, if the hello packet came from the backbone. We have a router priority field, which is going to be used for the DR and BDR election. You should know that by default, all of your routers are going to have a priority value of 1. We can set the router priority to 0 to ensure that a device does not win the election, or we can set it higher to 1 to try and impact the device winning the election. When it comes to your DR and BDR election process, remember that it is non-preemptive. So we could go to a converged topology, we could increment the priority value on a particular device, and this will not prompt a recalculation of the designated router in that topology. There's also the DR and BDR address field in the hello packet, and this lists the IP addresses of the designated router and backup designated router if those values are known. And then we have our authentication password field. Obviously, the password must match on routers that are configured for OSPF authentication. Finally, in the hello packet, we have our stub area flag. All routers in an area must agree on this setting in order to form a stub area. So now we know the exact mechanism behind the scenes when it comes to our stub areas. Remember, with your stub areas, you're not going to form an OSPF adjacency with another area if it's with another router, if one of those routers is set up for stub and the other router isn't. And now we know exactly how that works. There's a stub area flag in the hello packets. That setting must match in order for the devices to establish their adjacency. Now, let's take a look at the details in the actual exchange process between two routers on a LAN, we'll say router 1 and router 2, and the OSPF adjacency states that are involved in this sequence of transactions. In our first step, router 1 begins in what we call an OSPF down state. And this is because it's not currently exchanging OSPF information with any other router. It's going to be sending its hello packets via the all OSPF speakers address. Do you remember what that is? Yeah, it's 224.0.0.5. Now, router number 2 is going to receive the OSPF hellos, and it's going to add router 1 to its list of neighbors. This is the beginning of what we call the OSPF init state. Init, I-N-I-T, is short, of course, for initialization. Router 2 is then going to send a unicast. Notice it's a unicast hello packet back to router 1 in response. Router 1 receives that unicasted hello, and it notices that it's listed as a neighbor in the packet. Remember, that's that neighbor field in the hello packet. It adds router 2 to its list of neighbors, and now router 1 knows that it has bidirectional communication with router 2. This is known as the entering of what we call the OSPF two-way state. In a LAN environment, we then have the election of the designated router and backup designated router. And also in a LAN environment, we're going to have these hello packets function as a keep-alive mechanism every 10 seconds. After the designated router and backup designated router are established, the routers are in what we call the X start state. That's EX. S-T-A-R-T, and they're ready to exchange database information. The exchange protocol actually functions as follows. In the X-start state, the DR and BDR establish an adjacency with each router in the network, and they form a master-slave type relationship with the router ID indicating the master in this relationship. The master and slave routers exchange database description packets, and this is called the exchange state. The link state advertisements in the database description packet include sequence numbers that are used to indicate the freshness of this information. When a database description is received, the router actually acknowledges this receipt and compares the information with its current database. If more recent information is described in this database description packet, then the router sends a link state request, basically saying, hey, look, I notice you got some more current information than I do. Give it to me. And this is called the loading state. The router receives the link state request and responds with a link state update. This link state update is also acknowledged by the receiver. In the next step, the router adds the new information to its link state database And when this exchange completes, the routers are now in the full state. Now, it's kind of funny to hear all this, isn't it? Because it sounds like this is something that would take an awfully long time and would be quite cumbersome. But as you'll see at the command line, it's going to happen pretty quickly on our Cisco router. Router information is later maintained using the following process. Let's say the router notices a change and it multicasts a link state update to the DR and BDR. Now, how is the router going to indicate this change? Well, we said it's going to multicast a link state update. And you know how it does that. It's going to send it to the DR and the BDR using the address of 224.0.0.6. The designated router will acknowledge the link state update and flood it to all of its OSPF speakers using the address 224.0.0.5. This process involves acknowledgments, by the way, as well. The DR will then also send this link state update to any other networks to which it is attached. It's pretty neat. So the DR is attached to the broadcast network, and it takes care of educating everyone in the broadcast network about the update. And then it will also look and see if it's attached to any other networks. Maybe it's attached to a serial point-to-point. Maybe it's attached to another broadcast-based network. And it will make sure that those areas, I shouldn't say area, it'll make sure that those networks are aware of the update as well. Obviously, the routers in our topology hear this information, and they update their link state database with the new information that's contained in this link state update. Remember that summaries are going to be sent every 30 minutes, that's our paranoid update, to ensure synchronization. And link state entries, remember this, link state entries have a max age value of 60 minutes. Something else that we want to be aware of when it comes to OSPF, and we will definitely face this in, at the very least, the configuration portion of our CCIE lab exam. We want to be aware of OSPF and its operation over various types of network links. OSPF will recognize a point-to-point link. Typically, a point-to-point link is a serial link, but it could also be a sub-interface in frame relay or an ATM-type network. Remember that on a point-to-point link, OSPF will assign the point-to-point network type and no designated router or no backup designated router election will exist for this simple point-to-point environment. So you might ask, how are packets exchanged in that point-to-point type of environment? Well, packets are simply going to be multicast to the 224.0.0.5 address. The all routers, all OSPF speakers address is simply utilized there since we have no DR or BDR. Now, what about a non-broadcast multi-access environment like frame relay? Well, by default, OSPF will identify a multi-point physical frame relay interface and assign a mode of NBMA. Let me repeat that, very important. OSPF will see that your physical interface, your physical multi-point interface, is configured for frame, and OSPF will automatically assign the NBMA mode to that particular interface. Now, in NBMA mode, we do indeed have a designated router and a backup designated router in use. But because it is assumed that this particular non-broadcast environment does not support broadcasts or multicasts, you have to go in and manually configure the neighbors in this NBMA mode. We do that, of course, with the OSPF neighbor command. The neighbor command in OSPF router configuration mode is used in order to assign the, or configure, the neighbor that we are to be adjacent with. Something to watch out when you're using this NBMA mode for OSPF is you have to design it so that your designated router and backup designated router have full connectivity with all of the other routers. Remember, every router in the OSPF network there needs to be fully adjacent with the DR and BDR. Therefore, we need to have full connectivity with these devices. You can go ahead and just think this through. In a hub and spoke type of topology, your hub device, therefore, is going to need to be configured as the designated router. Because the hub device in the hub and spoke topology is the only device that can offer us full connectivity with all the other routers. NBMA mode might sometimes be configured by an administrator in a partial mesh type of frame relay environment. Now, another option that is, by the way, the NBMA mode of operation I just described to you, that is an open standard RFC compliant mode of operation. Good to know for the core knowledge section. So NBMA mode is indeed RFC compliant. Another mode of operation for OSPF that is RFC compliant is the point to multipoint mode of operation. In the point to multipoint mode, we have one IP subnet that is utilized for the point to multipoint segment, and we do indeed have hello packets that are used to discover neighbors. A designated router or a backup designated router is not utilized in the RFC compliant point to multipoint configuration, and we often see administrators using this type of config in a partial mesh environment. The point to multipoint, a good way to remember its functionality, like hello packet usage and no requirement for DR or BDR, a good way to remember the point-to-multipoint is it basically acts like a collection of point-to-point links. So sure enough, we don't have a DR or BDR concept, and we don't have to use the neighbor command because we can use hellos to automatically discover the neighbors. Now, the RFC compliant modes are NBMA mode and point-to-multipoint as we just discussed, but it's important for you to understand that Cisco created some of their own modes of operation for OSPF. One of those is an extension of the RFC compliant point-to-multipoint OSPF network type, and it is the point-to-multipoint non-broadcast mode of operation for OSPF. Once again, there's no DR or BDR, but it's assumed here that your interfaces truly cannot multicast. So if the interfaces cannot multicast, sure enough, with the point-to-multipoint non-broadcast mode, we must manually configure the neighbor relationships. So point-to-multipoint non-broadcast is going to have us go in and manually configure those neighbors, just like we did in the NBMA mode of operation. Now, another Cisco proprietary OSPF network type, believe it or not, is the broadcast network type. We've already spoken quite a bit about the broadcast network type, and you would use this certainly if you had a full mesh environment with frame relay. Now, I know what you're thinking. Anthony, give me a break. Full mesh with frame relay would be such a rare configuration. And I agree. But if you did happen to be in a frame relay full mesh, you might want to go ahead and set up the broadcast mode of operation. It makes your frame relay wide area network environment appear as if it's a local area network environment. You're going to have hellos automatically used to discover neighbors. You're going to have your DR and BDR election. It's going to behave just like its LAN-based broadcast media. Another invention by Cisco is the point-to-point mode of operation. We talked about point-to-point earlier, where we have no DR and BDR concept, and the interface could actually be a LAN-based or WAN-based interface that we convert to the point-to-point link. So, what command do we use to actually manipulate the OSPF network type on an interface? Well, we use the command IPOSPF network under the interface. And when you use the IPOSPF network command, you can then specify if that particular interface should run as broadcast, or non-broadcast multi-access, or point-to-multipoint, or point-to-multipoint non-broadcast, or point-to-point. When you are configuring this, as we said earlier, if you're in a partial mesh, it may be very, very important to you as to which device is the designated router. Well, remember, setting your priority to zero on a device ensures that the device will not become the designated router. Elevating the priority for certain devices will influence the election and the choice of designated router. Now, no discussion would be complete of our OSPF adjacencies and our network types without discussing what could go wrong. We definitely want to be well-versed in troubleshooting for the core knowledge section of the CCIERS exam, as well as, obviously, the configuration portion. By the way, plenty of troubleshooting in the CCIE written as well. And by the way, one of the reasons I decided to focus on OSPF with this broadcast is I've just put the finishing touches on the OSPF material in our CCIE written bootcamp. So for those of you that are interested on, you know, really immersing yourself and testing yourself on OSPF, check out our CCIE written bootcamp. But let's talk troubleshooting these neighbor relationships. What if you get your OSPF all configured and you take a look at your list of neighbors with the command show IP OSPF neighbor and your list is empty? Yikes. Well, the first thing that I would do is I would make sure I have enabled OSPF properly on the interfaces that I actually intended to enable it on. I'd also, you know what, let me back up. Before I would do that, I'd check layer 1 and layer 2, right? Make sure we don't have a layer 1 or layer 2 problem. Obviously, if layer 1 and layer 2 are not happy, layer 3 is very, very angry as well. So let's just get back to basics here and make sure we can ping the devices that we are trying to neighbor with. All right, then I check and make sure I've configured OSPF properly on the correct interfaces. Watch out for things that might be blocking hellos, like the configuration of passive interface. Look out for access lists. Something else that we have to be aware of is things like authentication misconfigurations. That would certainly prevent you from neighboring. How about hello and dead timer interval mismatches? With some of our IGPs, like EIGRP, it doesn't matter if there's a mix of hello and dead intervals, but OSPF is particular about that. They must match. We also need to watch out for area ID and stub flag mismatches. Also, we want to make sure that we are configuring the network types appropriately. So make sure you take a look at your configuration of network type when you're troubleshooting your neighbor relationships. Now, you might try and bring up your neighbors, and you find when you run repeatedly your show IPOSPF neighbor command, you might see that the list isn't empty, but you might see that your neighborship is stuck in the attempt state. What do we check for immediately if we're stuck in the attempt state? Well, typically we have required the neighbor command and we've misconfigured it. So if you've misconfigured your neighbor statement, you'll see that you're stuck in attempt. Also, it might be that you're in a frame relay, for example, NBMA environment, and unicast functionality isn't working right in your NBMA environment. That would stick you in the attempt state as well. What if you run your show IP OSPF neighbor command and you notice that you're stuck in the init or initialization state? Well, typically this indicates that you've got an access list or a layer 2 issue that is blocking your hello packets in one direction. Maybe it's multicast that is non-functional on one side. Maybe even it's authentication that you've only configured on one side. Finally, another frequent cause of being stuck in the init state is that you have a missing broadcast keyword from your frame relay map command. What if you run your show IP OSPF neighbor command and you see that your OSPF devices are stuck in the two-way state? Well, one time that we see a particular unique misconfiguration that we see that sticks you in the two-way state is that all of your devices are configured with a priority of 0. Uh-oh, no one wants to become the designated router, and you will be stuck in two-way state. If we have one of our neighbors stuck in the XStart or Xchange state for any reason, that could result in us being stuck in the two-way state. If you were to have a mismatch of your MTU, or if you were to have duplicate router IDs on your OSPF speakers, this could stick us in the two-way state. And finally, broken unicast connectivity can stick us in that two-way state. Finally, what if you run your show IP OSPF neighbor command and you find you're stuck in the loading state? Well, this is typically one of two causes. Once again, we have an inadvertent mismatch of our maximum transmission unit, or we have a corrupted link state request packet. Well, that covers the OSPF technologies that I wanted to discuss with you in today's Core Knowledge Tech Talk. We'll be back next week with some more OSPF-related tech talks for you, for sure. So what I want to do with the rest of our broadcast today is take some of the emails that we have received to wineradio@ine.com. And we have one here from Paul. Paul's asking, not necessarily about OSPF, but Paul's asking about the Core Knowledge section. Paul indicates that he's heard that the Core Knowledge section is going to go away and that it was basically being beta tested for RS. And Paul, the unfortunate thing about that is it's not going away. In fact, it is indeed being added to all of the tracks. Cisco had alluded to that, and it is finally happening. As of June 15th, the Core Knowledge section appears on the security exam. And it would appear that Cisco's going in order of exam popularity, isn't it? The most popular track is Route Switch, and they started the Core Knowledge section there. And then the second most popular track is Security, and sure enough, that's the second track that is receiving the Core Knowledge section on June 15th. I would assume that Service Provider is going to follow after Security. So we'll just have to see. But yeah, the section's not only going away, Paul, but it is being added to all of the other tracks. And there's no indication that it will ever go away in the near term, because remember, Cisco has announced version 4 of the RS Lab exam, and they've promised us that version 4 of the RS Lab exam will feature this Core Knowledge section. So it's a real challenge to us as your instructors, because we just have to keep cranking out as excellent materials as we can to get you prepared for the in-depth Core Knowledge section of the Route Switch exam, as well as the other tracks. We have another email here, this one from Jamie, and Jamie asks, can you cover the LSA types for OSPF with us? I can never seem to remember the LSA types. Jamie, no problem. We're actually going to cover them in great detail in our next Core Knowledge Tech Talk, but let me just review them with you quickly here. This is actually kind of like an instructor challenge moment here, because I'll try and do it off the top of my head. Oh boy, I'm probably going to make a mistake and be flooded with emails, but I'll try and do it off the top of my head here. There are, gosh, how many of them do we need to worry about? There are six of them that we really, really need to worry about as far as OSPF Core Knowledge goes. There's the Type 1 LSAs, and those are the router LSAs, right? These are the fundamental LSAs. You know what? I think I've made a mistake already here. Let's see. I better reference something here so I don't mess this up. I don't think our Type 1s are called router LSAs, are they? The Type 1, yeah, they actually are. Wow, see? I don't trust myself. Anyways, Type 1 is our router LSAs, and those are the fundamental building block LSAs. They flood into an area, and they announce link information into the area. The Type 2 we need to be aware of is the network LSA. The network link state advertisement, this is the one that gets produced by the designated router, and it is going to list all of the routers that are attached to the multi-access network, and it's also going to include the DR itself. This type floods within an area as well. Then we have the Type 3 network summary LSA. This one gets originated by area border routers, and it is sent into an area to advertise destinations that are outside of the area. The flooding scope for the Type 3 is the entire OSPF autonomous system. We have the Type 4 ASBR summary LSA, and this is to announce the location of the autonomous system boundary router. Then we have the Type 5 AS external LSA. These are generated by the ASBR to announce prefixes external to your domain. And then we have our Type 7s. Type 7s are used for our not-so-stubby areas. So, Jamie, I want you to be aware of Type 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 7. Be intimately familiar with those for the Core Knowledge section. You're probably going to want to make flashcards on those, and you're going to want to make sure the flashcards walk you through things like, what is the type designation number? What is the common name or common terminology for that LSA type? Where does that thing flood? What is that thing used for, etc.? And I promise to cover those LSA types with you again in an upcoming Tech Talk, and I promise to go into much greater detail than I just did. Well, folks, I want to thank you so much for your attendance and your participation for all of those who sent in your great email questions for us today. I want to thank you all for listening to WINE Radio and for choosing InterNetwork Expert as your Cisco certification training vendor. Enjoy the music we'll be broadcasting throughout this holiday weekend. For those of you that are going to be celebrating a bit this weekend, obviously be very, very safe. Have a great time. And as always, when you study, especially for the Core Knowledge section, make sure you're making those studies as enjoyable as possible. Thanks again for your attendance and participation, and I look forward to broadcasting to you soon another great Tech Talk here on WINE Radio. Also, one more quick reminder, Scott Morris wants to be on our hot seat, so next week we promise to deliver a live Q&A here on WINE Radio with Scott Morris. Absolutely, that promises to be entertaining as well as enlightening. So we can't wait to do a live Q&A next week with InterNetwork Expert's own Scott Morris. We'll be right back.
Bye.